But okay, I'm a painfully irritated vagina. Okay, got it. And then I'm thinking, what are they going to show on the screen? I mean, they can't show a real vagina talking. It's got to be like an animated thing, you know? Like that purple thing in that depression commercial that follows that woman around.
Dave Hill's podcasting incident on FUBAR Radio.
Hey, everyone. Before we get started, don't forget to pick up my brand new stand-up album, The Pride of Cleveland, out now on 800 Pound Gorilla Records. Hello and welcome to Dave Hill's podcasting incident with me, Dave Hill, the pride of Cleveland and beyond. This is a true story. I was at the grocery store yesterday and I got carded. And I did. Well, I had glasses, a hat, and a mask on. And if you look at just my eyes with my glasses on. Anyway, I'll by way of saying.
Very youthful.
Yeah, just be, the look in my, because then you just see my spirit, basically. My point is, I handed the license to the cashier. She dropped it, rubbed it in everyone's mouth in the entire grocery store, basically. And then she sprayed it with a disinfectant. And now I don't have coronavirus, I guess.
That's the cure.
Anyway, all by way of saying that good things happen to me wherever I go. You just heard Chris Gersbeck, who is
hey.
Your facial hair is coming back.
It's coming back.
Both disappointed. I'll miss the creepy Dickensian gang leader look that you had.
I think your exact words were a kid coke dealer
or yeah
child coke
yeah dealer. It's very disturbing, but we're here, we're zooming again, and joining us is our dear friend, the hilarious comedian, storyteller, raconteur, kink aficionado, and much more, the host of the Great Risk Storytelling Podcast, Mr. Kevin Allison.
Hello. Hello. It's good to be back.
Thank you for joining us. We spoke not long enough before hitting record for me to ask, where are you right now?
I am in my very small one-bedroom apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Wow.
So it's crazy to be here because, you know, I mean, it's a very crowded, very kind of working class kind of neighborhood. And, you know, things like going to the grocery or stuff like that are... It is an obstacle course. I tried to go to the Home Depot to pick up an Ethernet wire the other day, and there was like a 1 hour line of people trying to stand 6 feet apart. And then there are all the people who are just like, don't do that. Just zoom right up to you.
Yeah, that was part of why I left. That sort of behavior. I mean, granted, everything changes. I feel like week to week, like just people's behavior and stuff changes. And when I was still in New York 5 weeks ago, I just was getting so like aggravated that I felt like people were walking towards me intentionally, you know, when I was walking down the street. And then I was like, and then I had this weird, and quick pause, Chris, if this story comes off wrong, delete it from the episode. But I was walking my dog, and you know, I'd walk around my neighborhood, and I would just veer wildly away from people, like not 6 feet. I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna aim for 20, whenever possible."
I do that even when there's not a pandemic.
But I was walking I was walking across Charles Street and like Greenwich Avenue in the West Village, and there was this very tall African-American man crossing the street towards me, and he was wearing a mask. I wasn't even in mask wearing mode yet, because this is before, you know, they were recommending it. It was back when they were saying, oh, that's stupid, don't do that. Remember that? Those right. Simpler time. And I remember thinking, that doesn't seem too stupid to me, but okay, if you say so, I'll save $5. So anyway, this tall African-American gentleman's walking towards me, and he has a mask on, and I veer away from him, like, because I'm veering from everyone, and he stops and looks at me, like, turns around and looks at me, and I'm like, he didn't say anything. And then, of course, then I was thinking, naturally, I was like, oh, does he think that I'm avoiding him because he's a large African-American man?
Right.
And that might be just telling you what's wrong with my brain. But then he walked another couple of feet, and he turned again. He just seemed to be really angry with me. And then I wanted to be like, look, I think the reason you think I'm a racist and afraid of you, but I'm really afraid of coronavirus. Anyway,
that exact same experience, though, because I know that is a thing. I know that, you know, I've heard, you know, friends or people on Facebook talking about, have you seen white people like walk way out of the way or cross the street when a person of color is approaching? And so that's spun through my consciousness too, just walking around Bed-Stuy, of, you know, feeling the need to like let people know I'm just doing this because we all are.
Yeah, it creates a weird thing, but like you wouldn't do that. Like I avoid old ladies, you know, little old Irish Catholic ladies. I would run as far from them as anyone.
Yeah, well, my childhood with old Irish Catholic ladies, I learned how to avoid them early on.
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't learn soon enough, and I'm still clawing my way out of that. But but anyway, yeah.
Another thing is I have attention deficit disorder, so my risk of being hit by a car is always very high. But now, and on top of the fact that I'm usually a bit spaced out about looking both ways when I cross the street, on top of that, I'm walking in the street a lot now in order to avoid people on the sidewalk. So yeah, my risk of being hit by a car has gone way up.
Well, don't get hit by a car. I'm the same way, though. I'm amazed. Whenever I see those things, yeah, I'm so distracted. Like those videos of like when people are like looking on their phone and they fall into a manhole, and I just always assume that that's gonna be me. Not so much because I'm always looking at my phone.
Even I'm really careful, and I've been hit by cars twice.
You've Jesus. Been hit by okay that man. Feels like a shame on you.
That's terrible.
First time I was just crossing a street and a woman just made like a left turn right into me, and then the second time I was on my bike and it was the same situation. Both times I just they plowed over me, and I flipped over the car and everything.
I won't own a bike for that reason, and have never gotten a driver's license.
Oh wow.
I only
just got my license like 6-7 years ago.
Is that right?
Everyone was giving me so much shit about it. I grew up in New York City, so I just never had to drive anywhere.
Right.
But that's crazy. You still don't have it.
No.
I hear you on the bike, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I got a bike for a college graduation in 2017. No. As long as I know. And, though I guess it would be plausible that I just took a long time to finish college.
Well, you have such youthful eyes.
It is. Yeah. So I got this bike, and I got it for whatever reason. It was like back when I was like 21, and you just do stupid things because your parents will pay for it and you're not going to. So I was like, yeah, I took my bike home for the summer, and then I was like, yeah, just ship it to New York. which was a fucking insane thing. And somehow it had, because you could actually do it pretty, you get it on Amtrak ships, bikes. This is, it was, anyway, totally moronic thing that happened. But my dad somehow, or my brother, or someone did it. And I picked up the bike from Penn Station, rode the bike to wherever.
It just shows up like on a train in Penn Station?
And it, yeah, it's in a big ass box that your bike is in. Why they put it in a box, I don't know. And I got it and rode it like, okay, I'm going to ride home. I think I lived in the Bronx at the time. And so I was like, I'll ride home. And I rode like two blocks and almost got doored by a cab. And I was like, fuck this, I'm out. And I gave the bike to my brother. I was like, I'm just being realistic. Never going to fucking ride this in the city ever.
So did you have to put it back on an Amtrak?
No, my brother lived in New York. I can't remember. He may not have been the one, but I can't remember. But I thought he was maybe home and shipped it. Anyway, not key to the story. But I just was like, you know, I'm not going to ride a bike because I will be killed. So I'll occasionally rent a city bike and ride it along the Hudson.
I've been doored too.
You've been doored? Oh, forget it.
From the being run over.
Forget it. It's not worth it. It's like,
yeah, I can't recommend it really.
In my old age, and not even that old age, because I've decided this long ago that any activity where I could get horribly injured and hospitalized, aside from playing ice hockey, which could lead to that, but I feel like that's a contained, you're on the ice, like you're only going to fly so far on the ice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're not going to leave the rink. And so I don't, yeah, no bikes, no skiing. I don't accept skiing invitations. Snowboarding, yeah. No.
You know, of all the kink activities, like I love the idea of electro play. And I have been prodded with like electric cattle prods and police tasers and stuff like that.
But, I don't know why, but let me be clear, I'm not laughing at the cattle prod, but something about when you said police taser, just like then cattle prod, I mean, I've known you a long time and I know you well enough to not be phased about saying you were shocked with a cattle prod. I'm like, yeah, it's my friend Kevin, of course.
I think those are far more dangerous, actually.
I know, but I was just like, yeah, that's just Kevin, whatever. But then when you said police taser, I got a real kick out of it. I don't know why. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
But that whole realm is something I would love. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I so have that kink. I would love to like start buying that sort of equipment. And I'm like, no. If I owned that sort of equipment, I would kill myself or someone else. The only situation I can do that sort of thing is with, if I'm with like a real like pro, someone who teaches it and all that kind of stuff. Oh,
someone who teaches it. Oh boy. I feel like the most interesting part of someone who teaches that that sort of thing is when they show up that period before they're getting ready to prod you, and then immediately after when they stop, when they're just like, all right, I'm gonna go get a sandwich. I want to know what they're like outside of the prodding, but they're probably you know, as you are proof of, they're probably just totally normal folks.
Yep, that is one of the most surreal things about going to those kink camps is you'll have these parties and activities, and then it's like, okay, it's lunchtime, and everyone's at the cafeteria, you know.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, this bow tie pasta is really good. Exactly. Try that. That is sort of like, years ago, I went to a, this would have been about 2005, or so, I went, it was when I was just starting comedy and I was making videos with my friend Keith Goldberg, and we go to like Fashion Week and Comic-Con.
Oh, right. I remember those videos.
And I remember saying like, oh, there's like this, because a friend of mine is a dominatrix. And so she's like, oh, there's like a, you know, BDSM night at, I don't know where, somewhere in Chelsea.
Yeah, across the street from where UCB used to be now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's mm-hmm. where it was.
Yeah, and, New York Bondage Club.
Yeah, so I went there and I remember just thinking like, oh, like, it was just seemed like a lot of kind of like normal people being like, how do I kind of want to get something going where someone's hitting me, but I'm it's not like the it's not a bunch of really confident people just barreling in and beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah, well, that's a thing that not a lot of people know is that, and this, especially after 50 Shades of Grey became so popular, there are way more people who come to kink events who really have who have very little experience and are just kind of milling about like, oh, I wonder. And so getting, like, a lot of people I know, older people in the kink community, are now just really pushing the idea of mentoring, how important. And so literally, like, on Grindr, that is a lot, especially during COVID, that is a lot of what I do. I just have a profile that explains, I'm kinky, I've taught kink classes before, ask me anything. And guys will just come and be like, wait, how does this work? Or I've heard of this, what's this all about? And I thoroughly enjoy just like typing out explanations. And if a guy is hot, you know, maybe someday we'll have a hands-on class.
Yeah, when the pandemic's over. Wait, so, and then do you like, can they Venmo you, or is this just
no, there is, I have at kevinallison.com at my website, I do have like official personal consultations that I make with people. So like, you know, there are people who listen to Risk who like have real, they can't afford a therapist, but they have real issues around something that they're in the closet about, or some mm-hmm. kink that they've discovered that really freaks them out. So those people will go to kevinallison.com and have a half hour or an hour long session with me, where I'm just a helpful ear. I can point them to resources and stuff like that. But for most people, like on Grindr, it's just me having fun, just saying, oh yeah, you didn't know about this, you know.
Do people know who you are when they hit you up on there?
Sometimes, yeah. In fact, I was telling my therapist just yesterday, I went to a sex party like 4 months ago or so, and a guy came up to me and he was like, you know, here I'm walking around in a jock strap. Uh-huh. And a guy comes up to me, he's like, you're Kevin Allison. And I said, yeah. And he said, oh man, that one story you told, Kevin goes to P-Town, it was so well told, but I wanted to strangle you throughout the whole story because of how stupid you were for falling in love with that guy. And I was like, whoa, Jesus fucking Christ.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I was at an orgy in someone's apartment. This was a long time ago. I was married at the time.
Oh, this is over 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly, in my 30s. I was married at the time, and my husband and I had an agreement. You know, it was an open marriage, obviously. So
you had the best kind of agreement of any marriage.
Well, part of the agreement was he was so paranoid about crabs and scabies. He just had a thing about insecty sort of things.
Sure.
That he said, okay, you can go to these sex parties, but before you come home, I want you to lather your entire body in Rid shampoo for getting rid of crabs. He was like, those are the boundaries. Like, you can go to the sex party, but before you come home, have shampooed your whole body in Rid. And I was like, okay. I mean, a lot of these parties have bathrooms with showers and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, all right, I agree to that. That's the protocol for our marriage. So I go to this one orgy, and the guy's apartment is very small and his bathroom is very small. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing? I put all this and this stuff. Have you ever put Rid on yourself?
I don't believe so.
It burns. I mean, it is.
I would think so.
Yeah, it's designed to like sizzle on you. So I've lathered my entire body with this crab's eradicating goo. And a guy burst in the bathroom and he said, you're Kevin Allison from The State.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, yes, hello.
That's amazing.
Was it like still foaming on your skin? Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Hey, podcast fan. We have a quick favor to ask. We'd like to get a better idea of who you are and what you care about. So if you have a couple moments to spare, go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey. There, we've got a short, anonymous survey that won't take any more than 10 minutes to fill out. Plus, if you finish it, you'll get a 10% discount on our merch at the MaxFun store. MaxFun shows have always relied on support from our members and always will. The survey will help keep the few ads we do run relevant and interesting for you. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/ad survey, all one word. And thanks for your help.
That's amazing. I bet Michael Ian Black can't tell that story.
No, he did. I'll never forget. He did have this story once, though, that he told me way back in the day when we were on MTV, that he went to the vault. Do you remember the vault?
Oh, I went to the vault.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a sex club and sometimes BDSM sort of club back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, I have. Well, I'll continue, but I
think I've only heard about this place from you, Dave.
I have a story from there, but go ahead.
This was way back then. I was extremely sexually active, but didn't understand I was kinky yet. And so one day we're at MTV and Michael comes up to me and he's like, you're not going to believe what happened to me last night. I go to this place called The Vault. And, you know, I didn't really feel like having sex with anyone there. So I'm just sitting there at the bar. And this old man comes up to me. He has a very, like, Brooklyn accent. And he just keeps repeating the same thing. He's like, hey, how are you there? So I'd like to be your toilet. And... and Michael would just try to steer the conversation to other things, and the man just kept getting, you know, back to that. That's great. So if I could be your toilet, that would be great, you know. And back then I thought that was a very funny story, but now I know all kinds of people who actually, you know, do start conversations that way.
That's amazing. But Kevin, I feel like we could talk for hours. And I'm happy to, but in the event that you have anywhere to be, we need to give plenty of space to the latest episode of Risk that's coming out features a story about, if I'm getting this right, a man who ate his arm or his leg?
His leg. Yeah.
Because eating your arm would be crazy. Why did I even think of that? I apologize. I have not heard the story yet, but it's probably for the best, because then you can explain it to me, and I won't have any foregone conclusions.
Well, the thing about Risk is that it's a storytelling show, kind of like The Moth or even This American Life, but the difference is that we're completely uncensored. So there have been lots and lots and lots of stories on the podcast that are just like very, you know, they can be hilarious or scary or beautiful or whatever, but oftentimes they're like, what the fuck? The kinds of stuff that you're not going to hear, you know, on NPR for sure. And one of the things we like to do is when we see a story in the news where it's a splashy headline. We saw this in Vice, you know, Vice News had just done this article, this print article about, guy eats his own leg and serves it to his friends. And you might have seen it.
I did not see that.
It was maybe in 2017 or 2018 making the rounds. It kind of went viral of people being like, what the fuck? And so when we see stuff like that, we know, okay, this is a splashy headline for them. But if we talk to this guy on Risk, we can coach him to take us through the nitty gritty of the emotional journey. Like, what was going on in your life before? What is all the feelings and thoughts that it went into making this decision, and how did you change because of it? So this guy had never done a storytelling show, super average guy from Austin, Texas. And he goes by the name Shiny. That's another thing. A lot of people on Risk don't want to go by their real name for various reasons. But when we reached out to him, we really had no idea, is he going to be able to, with a lot of emotional intelligence, tell a good story about the nitty gritty of really why he did this? And he blew us away. He absolutely blew us away, because he got up at this live show of Risk that we did in Austin. I think it was like last November or December or something like that. And he just killed it. Like, no experience as a comedian, but had that audience like laughing like crazy for like 20 minutes. And it was really interesting, because what happened, he was in a motorcycle accident, lost most of like his shin down to his foot.
Oh.
And then in his delirious state, all the drugs in the hospital, had this sort of like, what would you call it? Like inspiration that came out of all of the hallucinating or whatever, that maybe we should eat this.
Oh my gosh.
And friends of his were like, yeah, you were saying that while you were out of your mind on drugs. So he decided to do that and make a communal meal out of it. And it's kind of amazing to us, the difference between the Vice magazine or online story that was put out about it and our story, because you get it when you hear it from the guy himself. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can see how you really went through this feeling and that feeling. And like, oh, okay. So that was almost like a life passage, almost like a Eucharistic meal. Had out of his leg, and it's quite funny and actually kind of inspiring.
So that is, I'm just one follow-up question: how much of the leg did everyone, would it be like, were they just kind of eating a little bit, like sort of symbolically, or were they really like, more of that?
They made fajitas.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. I do like, I mean, it is a real lemonade out of lemons type thing. But,
You know, it is interesting. I read the article because, you know, Kevin, you brought this up to me a while ago. And I didn't hear the episode until like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. But you're totally right. It's just such a, even going into it, knowing that this was like a vetted person that you had go through the whole storytelling process and everything, like it does, like you are able to kind of sympathize with his decision.
Oh yeah,
in a way that that article just doesn't do that justice at all. Just kind of sensationalizes it.
Another example that I give to people often is we've had lots and lots and lots of kinky stories on Risk before.
Oh yes.
But we had one on once about scat play, about a situation where a guy ate his partner's shit. And when people first hear about that, when people hear it described that way, they're like, oh, damn, I don't want to hear that. You know, it sounds like that's all the story is about. But when I recorded that guy's story, I knew right away, oh, this is going to have to be a longer story, and we're going to have to go through the emotional journey of these two men getting to know each other, learning about consent and negotiation as they go, kind of going through breaking one boundary and then another, and then the shit eating part of the story is like the last 5 minutes or something like that. So we, you know, when we put that story out, I got emails, like a woman wrote to me and she was like, I'm a Christian mother of four in Ohio and I don't have a kinky bone in my body and never want to do anything kinky. And I cannot believe that you had me crying tears of joy at this love story that involves this activity. And I was like, see, that's how it's done. We can relate to almost anything if a person really tells the story behind it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I got to I now have to go listen to both of these stories, but both on a storytelling level, but also like on a human level, I feel like it really like we're not all that different, really. The things that lead us to do the things that we do, maybe the thing that we do seems crazy, but when you look at the road to getting there, you're like, oh yeah,
right,
I relate to that.
Yeah, it's the emotions and the thought patterns that took people there, where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I've done things following a similar thought pattern, or oh, I felt that way about something totally different before. Yeah, yeah. Hey, you know what, Dave, do you remember, I probably have apologized to you for this before, but I did your show when you were on FMU?
Yeah, my WFMU show.
I came out to New Jersey to do mm-hmm. the show in person, and it was when I was still drinking.
I think you were maybe, it was sort of the last few weeks of it, maybe.
maybe.
It may have been the last night. No, not yet.
they yanked it from the air after I... No, I showed up...
As I recall, I think you told me, or someone told me that you had stopped drinking shortly after that.
Oh, I see. No, I stopped drinking only a year ago. I think this happened.
This would have been quite a while ago.
You
know, it would have been, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, but I showed up pretty drunk, and you had like a singer-songwriter on, and I belched in the middle of his song. Do you remember this?
I think Chris, was it Patrick's?
Patrick, song? I think, yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is because Patrick sadly is no longer with us.
Oh my God, are you kidding?
No, he very sad died.
I think the 5-year anniversary just passed. Like,
wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. But I felt so bad because at the time he was singing a song, I belched, and then I was laughing for having like interrupted his song with a big belch. And you were like, Kevin, what the fuck are you doing?
Though, you know, if there's anyone, he's kind of the perfect guy to have been the person in this story, because he's a hilarious guy, and also interrupted himself pretty much any time I ever saw him play a song. Something would happen, he would drop the pick into the hole of the guitar or something, and he would have to start over. So, well, for whatever consolation, and, you know, he was a great musician, songwriter, but as I think he himself would say, that had you not interrupted him, he would have had to start over anyway.
So. That's good. That's good to know.
So I do remember that night, though. But I don't. You owe me no apology. I have only fond memories of that night. So, it takes a lot for me to really be very mad at anybody.
Yeah.
That wouldn't do it. In fact, you know. Not that I want you to start drinking again, but you know, you could do the exact same thing sober at any time, and I would be entertained by it.
I did actually belch in the middle of my hosting on this week's Risk episode, and then just left it in there. Belched, broke out laughing, and then just left it in there. And I know some people will complain about that, you know.
Oh, like on an episode, not the live.
Yeah, no, an episode of the podcast. Yeah. I've done that before, and people have been like, dude, you're in my ear canal. I've got these earbuds in, and you just belched directly into my ear. It's so offensive.
Oh, I'll do you one better. If you can give me a second here.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you remember this. Let me see if I can find this. Kevin... Yes, here it is. I don't know if you guys can hear this. Can you hear this?
Yeah. What was that?
Is that me having orgasms?
I have a single track, 20 minutes that Kevin sent me.
Like, should I
abort this? Kevin,
No, you don't have to abort it. But you should definitely send me that track, because I don't know if I own that still.
Kevin sent me, he sent me over 20 minutes of him, what I believe to be... actual recorded sounds of him moaning during actual real orgasms. Now,
oh my god!
Let me.
Was that for Risk, or was that just?
Yeah, there was a time that I was just for fun keeping an audio recorder on when I was doing sexual things, and because I wanted to hear the sound of my own orgasms, because I go a little bit out of my mind when I'm having an orgasm, and people always comment, Jesus Christ, are you too loud? You know what I mean? Like, the neighbors, everyone will hear. And I think I'm louder than ever now. But anyway, so I made a collection of those recordings, and at the time I thought it was funny to play them for people, but now I'd probably be very self-conscious. I don't know, you know, all it is like a lot of Risk is daring myself to come out about something or put something out there, and it's not like I'm more shy nowadays. It's just that whenever any amount of time passes and you look back on something, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, I did that, didn't I?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. I think knowing what you had sent me, And as much as I applaud it to this day, I was, because I would play different sound bites on my show. And I can't find it, but I felt like that was too, I didn't want to hear it on my show. But what I did do, and I can't find the clip. Chris, maybe I'll send it to you as like an outro thing when we're done, if I can find it. But I took it and I put it into Pro Tools and I slowed it down to, I pitch shifted it so it's more like.
You have to send that to me.
So, and I made just like a shorter thing. So Kevin, I don't think we've ever discussed this. I apologize. I don't think, I'm not sure I ever gave you, there was attribution, but frequently on the show, sort of coming out of or going into songs and things like that, I would play Kevin Ellison at pitch down. They're like,
that is amazing.
So,
oh my God.
So you were on the show far more times than you remember.
That is incredible. Than
you knew about.
Yeah, I have recordings also of me being tickle tortured, which at the time that I first met this guy, and that was his big fetish, is tying someone down to a bed and tickle torturing them. And the deal with him was, he was one of those people who is so incredibly attractive that you're like, oh yeah, I'll do that. That sounds great. You know what I mean? Like, I've gotten myself in that situation way more times than I should. He was like, I think he was an Alvin Ailey dancer, you know, like a beautiful black guy. And so very like, you know, athletic and muscular and everything. And he seemed to have a fabulous sense of humor too, you know, when we chatted. And I had no idea how sadistic he was with it. Like, you know, he would like he would take like a hairbrush, like a really firm hairbrush, and just like intensely like dig it like propulsively into your feet, or take his fingers and dig them as deep as he could into the inner thighs, like on either side of your balls or whatnot, or under your arms, like just digging so deep into the muscle or whatever that it leaves a real bruise. And so I made audio recordings of these things, and it's a little bit painful because it's mostly me being like just enduring what is a little bit like a Guantanamo kind of like.
Oh boy. Not to interrupt or digress too much, but this makes me think, do you know the Sensitive Nips guy?
No.
Sensitivenips.com. Let me see if his website is still. That's a website. I don't really know how I've stumbled upon this guy.
Oh, you know, I wonder if it's the guy that someone sent me a picture of just the other day. Sensitive Nips.
He's like an older man.
Right.
Sensitivenips.com is down. And he does all sorts of like, he had like a million, but he had, oh, I can play you like, okay, all is okay.
Oh, I see photos of him. So he likes to have his own nipples tortured.
No, he's this guy who, I wish I could find that. I used to play sound bites of him on my radio show. Okay, here we go. Let me see. I have a sound bite of him.
Since you and I may not ever have the chance to meet in person, here's a message for you. A massage for you, wherever you are. Take a moment and breathe. Touch your own forehead and face. Just stroke it as lightly and gently as you can. Close your eyes and feel the joy of your own caress. Soothe yourself.
Oh, so his name is... Oh my gosh, you have to just come on the show every week, I think.
Is he appealing to, he's probably appealing to women, right?
No. His name is Bob Patrick. And he's like this older gay man, but he kind of, his thing is like, he is kind of like, his delivery is just like, hey, I'm your buddy. And he always refers to his guy. He's like, some of my guys have been asking, like he has some sort of thing like, yeah, come over, I'll fix your car and we'll have a beer and I'll not fuck you in the ass. Like that's kind of his his thing. Like he just kind of like, and he's like, you know, some of my guys have been asking like, how do I, you know, what if I want to shove up, you know, anyway, I cannot remember why I brought, I'm so distracted because while I was looking, anyway, all by way of saying, thought I discovered him. And then I think I posted it on Twitter and sure enough, Tosh.0 had him on a few weeks later. But what I did find, and good for them, by the way, what I did find, Kevin, see if this sounds familiar to you.
Well, it's probably got a lot of lube in there.
Can you hear that, Kevin?
Yeah. That's me?
That's one of your pitch down lines that I used. I think that might, maybe you're remembering. I know for a fact that's you. And I think that maybe was what I would play the most on the show.
I do. I have learned erotic hypnosis in the past couple of years, and there are a lot of erotic hypnosis, whatever, MP3s that you can find online. And those, you know, depending on the character, depending on the person making it, you can get a lot of crazy audio clips out of those.
Wait, so erotic hypnosis, they like hypnotize you and then you come everywhere?
Yeah, the idea is it's the top, the dom, is the hypnotist, and the sub is the person who's going to be hypnotized. And you use the exact same techniques that hypnotherapists use. You have to learn, first you have to learn how to hypnotize someone.
Sure.
So it's very, very involved. It takes a lot of study. But then the idea is to take someone on an imaginary sexual journey, and then you can actually, depending on who is hypnotizable, because people have different levels of the extent to which they are able to go into trance. You know, some people are very able, and a lot of people are only a little bit able. And what I tell people who have approached me about, I've only done it once to someone. One of the reasons I've only done it once is because it takes so much goddamn time to prep for it. You have to interview a person first. You have to get to know, like, if they have any phobias, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, what I tell people is, think of it as role play, and then try to commit to the bit, and then maybe it'll actually work. And if it doesn't work, then just continue thinking of it as role play. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of go, we're just kidding. No, I'm not. Yes, I am.
Right.
Not quite that, but I don't know. Oh boy. I feel like we should just have Kevin on every week, Chris. What do you think?
Sure, yeah. We can do part two if you want.
I would absolutely do part two if you're up for it. We got to do this soon. Well,
first of all, you got to send me that 20-minute audio, and then I can let you know if I want you to destroy it forever.
Oh yeah, but you know, it is not been distributed in any way. It remains just something close to my heart and my hard drive. And I can't remember, and I think it's probably best I not even try to figure it out. I can't remember the conversation that led to you sending it to me.
Oh, I remember. I came on to your radio show. It might have been the same time that I was belching in the middle of a folk song.
I think it was probably, yeah. It was, yeah, right,
I was like, hey, Dave, look at this audio I thought you could play while we're on the air.
Oh, I think, yeah, that sounds right. I used to, and I don't know where this got off to. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show, but when I was like 18, 19 years old and home from college over the summer, my dad had turned my brothers and our bedroom into his office that he would use, you know, most of the year until we came home for the summer. And so he had, you know, his desk, and he was a lawyer, and he had one of those dictaphone, whatever, like with the little tape cassettes.
Right.
And so, and I was just, you know, starting to grow into being a man. So all of a sudden, by way of saying, I was all of a sudden ripping these grown-up farts that I never had my whole life. You know, I was like, wow, these are really even different from back in high school. And so I had this thing, and I would leave it next to my bed. Was right, had this window, and I would just leave it on the windowsill. And let me stress, not something I would ever do today, but I was 18 or 19, and I would wake up, and I would have a fair amount of farts stored up from the night. I'm sure many slipped out in my sleep, but I had many locked and loaded. And I would wake up, and before I got out of bed every morning, I would just hold the cassette player like in the vicinity of my butt, and it would just be like, and just the most ridiculous farts. And then stop. The best part, it was like summer in University Heights, Ohio. So you would hear like click, you'd the tapes turn on, you'd hear like the morning, you know, you hear birds chirping, and then you would hear just like, and then you would hear, in some cases I would just laugh at what, and then it would go click, shut off, and then you'd keep listening to the tape, and it go click, and it turns on, it's like, oh, it's raining now, and then you'd hear another fart, turns off. You know, and over, so every day you would hear like, oh, some sort of ambient sound that's happening in the suburbs of Cleveland, followed by a ridiculous fart. And it just would go on and on for a whole side of a mini cassette. So
that's amazing.
That's probably somewhere in my dad's belongings to this day, because he doesn't ever get rid of anything. So
I remember I once, I don't know, maybe I was in the seventh grade or something like that, and I had the stomach flu, the sort of thing, you know, or food poisoning, the sort of thing where you have to vomit every half hour or so, you know, mm-hmm. and you keep having to vomit beyond having anything to vomit. Yeah. And at the time I had my new Radio Shack cassette recorder, you know. So I had these recordings, and every time I was running to vomit, and the thing was like a huge, you know, back then they were these huge boxes, so I'm like grabbing it, pressing play and record, and running to the bathroom.
Oh my god. That's amazing. I'm glad, you know, I think if the listeners can take anything from this, it's just, I feel like, you know, we're both in a really great place today, coronavirus aside, and we're both doing well. And but we, as very young men, created some disturbing content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even just 5 years ago.
Well, I won't ask whether there's an updated orgasm recording out there.
Oh, God.
Until the next episode, when you come back.
Sounds good.
Kevin, thank you so much. And also, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. There is no shame, as we know, in anything that's been discussed today. But thank you. And you look incredible. As I think I told you last time I saw you in person, you look great. Not that you ever didn't, but
I got a lot healthier after I stopped drinking.
You're super ripped.
Thank you.
Because we're recording this on Zoom, everybody. Did we talk about this? I can't remember in this episode. Why is no one talking about the likelihood that the Zoom people caused coronavirus? Because Oh, I had never ever heard of it before.
I used it precisely once before all of this.
And it's now everyone knows Zoom. It's the most popular thing in the world.
Yeah,
besides coronavirus.
Apparently we denied him, the billionaire who started it, entry into the United States like 5 or 6 times. And now he's like, I think he's a Chinese guy, I think maybe. And now he's like, yeah, I never needed to come over there anyway.
Oh, wow. So he was a billionaire already.
I think he's become one, you know, in the time since we were like, we don't want you, you can't come over here. You know, like,
oh, okay.
Like we are to pretty much anyone who's not white nowadays.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, gosh.
That's a sad note to end on.
Let's give some razzmatazz. Da 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 da. Things are gonna get better, and we're gonna get rid of all the racist shit bags running this country. Da da do. Oh my gosh. I hope when we get to the other side of all this, both the coronavirus and all the horrible all sorts of fuckery going on. Mm-hmm. From our government in this country, that on the Capitol steps, Kevin, you can cattle prod me one day to celebrate this great nation.
That let's look forward to that future.
Hold me to it. Hold me to it. We're gonna get there. I believe it with all my heart. We'll get there. And it'll happen soon enough that we'll both be looking great from at least across the street.
And so, I'll have talked to someone who is a teacher in cattle prods first to make sure I don't set the setting too high.
Well, I'll be wearing a helmet just in case I keel over. I don't want to like crack my head open, you know. But yeah, bring it on. I mean, I should probably ask what you do with the cattle prod before I commit to that, but whatever. No, I'm in. I'll find out when America is
well again.
When it's well. Isn't that weird? I was going to say when it's great. I almost use the slogan of the evil.
I almost feel
empire.
Like that slogan would actually make sense now.
Yeah, it would. Jesus Christ, yeah.
Isn't it weird how like things like you can never, no one can wear a red hat again.
Right.
Like without, anyway, we don't need to include all that. I mean, most of it, include the cattle prod, cut out the part about the hat, and we'll wrap it up. Kevin, you'll undoubtedly be back soon. Thank you, Kevin. Allison. You can
Thank
cut out
you.
That space where I said Kevin and then weirdly said Allison 5 minutes later. Everyone, go listen to the Risk podcast. It's incredible. I've listened to it. I've lived it. I've done it many times. And I will pester you to do it again soon to get on that Risk Zoom bandwagon.
But yeah, everyone can go to risk-show.com/tour to find out when our live streams are happening, and then on all of the socials we're at Risk Show.
Excellent. Okay, Chris, let's ride off into the podcasting sunset. Let's say thank you to our friends at Maximum Fun to having us be part of the magic. Please support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Dave Hill, and
your stand-up album.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we'll see you. Don't forget to buy my album, The Pride of Cleveland, out now on 800-pound Gorilla Records. And please get the new Witch Tane album if you need music to listen to while getting tasered in a consensual environment.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon.